I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to The Stacks. I am your host here, Tracy Thomas. This week's episode, I am joined by Vella Lavelle, actress from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and The Big Sick. And we're discussing our Stacks book club pick, New Boy by Tracy Chevalier. This book is a retelling of William Shakespeare's Othello. Before we dive in, I have a few little housekeeping notes, and then I want to let you know about something new that we're doing here at The Stacks. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, please. We appreciate it. Make sure you don't miss an episode. It's a great thing. Just click subscribe wherever you listen. If you're listening to us through iTunes, please rate and review the show. It's a simple step and it goes a really long way to helping us get the word out about The Stacks. So when you're done listening, or right now while you're listening to this, just go rate and review. It's super easy and we love you for it. Now, here's the new exciting thing that we're doing at The Stacks. We are launching our Patreon page. Patreon is a website that allows listeners, supporters of artists to contribute to the work that's being made. The deal is that you support us and we contribute some exclusive, awesome perks to our patrons only. The first thing is we're calling patrons from now on the Stacks Pack. So anybody who contributes any monetary donation to this show, you're part of the Stacks Pack. Welcome. You're awesome. What I'm asking for is any amount of money that you are able to give to help me so that I can keep the lights on here, so that I can host the website, I can reach out to organizations, I can spend a little more time making this show everything that you guys want it to be. By contributing, you're also saying I support independent artists and content that's important to me, content that talks about literacy, reading, education, and also facts, right? Information. So if you believe in what we're doing here, I would greatly appreciate you pledging a little money to become part of the Stacks Pack. In order to do that, you just go to www.patreon.com/thestacks. Patreon is spelled patreon.com/thestacks. And I, of course, have put a link in there for you for the show notes. So if you're able to contribute a little bit, as little as $1 a month, I'm serious, you get some awesome perks. You get access to a private Stacks Pack feed. You get shout outs on social media. You get your name read on air. You get recognition, access, information, a little bit ahead of the rest of the pack, right? So if you're able to do that, please check out patreon.com/thestacks. I'm forever grateful for any of you who are able to contribute. And if you can't contribute, I'm also grateful for you to listen to the show. So, you know, this isn't a value judgment. This is just me asking you to be a part of something that we're doing here. You'll hear me talk about Patreon for a little bit now, but I wanted to give you a heads up and let you know exactly what we're doing and why we're doing it. if you're not able to contribute, also please spread the word. All of you, anybody who likes what we're doing here, spread the word, get the word out. That helps us to build a bigger following and also, you know, to create work that is connected to you. So send us a message, tweet at us, follow us on Instagram, whatever it is. You can see all those links in the show notes. So that's super easy. Now, the last little bit before I bring you Vella is a little correction. Vella and I last week said that we were in a play called As You Like It, which is in fact a Shakespeare play. We also said that we played a character called Dumain, which in fact we did. However, the Dumain character comes from All's Well That Ends Well and not As You Like It. And you would think that Vella and I, two people who talked for an hour about how much we love Shakespeare, would maybe remember that. But obviously we didn't and we failed you all. So we were in All's Well That Ends Well. We played the Dumain in that show and not As You Like It. So that's just to clear it up because I did get some emails and some texts from some friends of mine who I studied Shakespeare with for a whole year who were like, you're an idiot. So yes, I am. So is Vella, but shit happens. Okay, now we're going to dive in. Vella and my's conversation about Tracy Chevalier's book, New Boy, and also William Shakespeare's play, Othello. I hope you guys enjoy it. And of course, send us over any comments or reflections you have after listening to the episode. Thank you so much. Enjoy. Okay, y'all, we are back on the Stacks. I am Tracy Thomas, and I am joined again by actress Vella Lavelle. This week is our Stacks Book Club conversation, and we are talking about New Boy by Tracy Chevalier. It's one of the books from the Hogarth Shakespeare Collection, which is a bunch of different books that are the retellings of different Shakespeare plays, and this one focuses on the retelling of Othello. It's set in the 1970s in Washington, D.C., and it's actually in an elementary school. They're sixth graders. So, Vella, welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
Yay. Oh, before we get started, let me just say this. We are going to spoil New Boy a little bit. However, if you're familiar with Othello, it's kind of hard to spoil the book because it's a retelling and it sticks pretty close for the most part. So I just want to give you that warning. If you feel okay listening, go ahead. But if you really want to read New Boy and you want to know how she does it, then you might want to read it and then come back and listen. I think that's fair.
Yeah. But like as a book, it's already kind of spoiled. Yeah, like, if you've read the play.
If you're even familiar with Othello, if you know like anything that happens in Othello, like if you've seen that movie, spoiled. Oh, yeah. Strong movie, Josh Hartnett, Mekhi Phifer, Julia Stiles.
I need to see it now.
It's really good. Okay. It's better than New Boy, no offense. Well, actually, we're just going to dive in.
We're diving in.
Vella, why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of like your initial thoughts about this book?
Like before I read it?
No, just like when you put the book down. Or okay. Maybe going into it too. Whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So I will say going into it, I was actually so excited mm-hmm. because I was like, this is a perfect book for me and Tracy mm-hmm. because it's Othello. So we have like some, you know, race talk in there. And then it's also like, so it's Shakespeare, which that's how we met. And it's a retelling. I was super into it. And I am not a fan coming out the other side.
Yeah.
I found it a little the themes are too simplified. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it kind of reduces such a complicated, beautiful, complex play to like very, very layman's terms in a way that it's just like, I don't think the story is that simple.
Right. It's, yeah. It's like she almost took it down so far that she lost kind of the beauty of the play.
And the reason for telling the story. I also like, when I read the back, I was like, oh, I'm excited to see Othello in, like with kids. Like, right. I was like, oh, interesting. But then I was like, oh, maybe, I don't know if it's maybe just not a story for kids or it's just this way. It doesn't hold.
Right. So one of the things that Tracy Chevalier does, which, is a very strong choice. I'm going to put it that way. Mm-hmm. She tells the story of Othello, of New Boy in one school day.
Right. Which I like, I did like.
It's just quick.
It's very quick.
When you think about the play Othello, I think one of the things that you think about is kind of like time passing and like jealousy building.
Right.
And to think that like children are so, basically you have to make the assumption that children are so emotional that they would be willing to, you know, die for something in the course of a school day. It's not even a full 24 hours. It's like
literally from
8 a.m. to like 3 p.m.
Yeah,
like it's like a school day.
Post lunch.
Right. Right. It's like the end of the school day, you know. So I think that that honestly might be one of like the biggest disservices that she does to herself, because you're really being forced to suspend your disbelief in a way that even Shakespeare doesn't ask you to do.
Right. And like, it's also like kids are, I think kids are so much more intelligent, so much more like aware than we give them credit for.
Yeah.
But even like kids are like, I just met you this morning.
Right.
I don't have that much investment in this relationship.
Right.
You know,
and let like alone kids are really good about like walking away from things.
Yeah. Or like letting things go. And sure. Like, I do think kids can hold a grudge, but like, I mean, to this extent in one day, like, I think if you had been like, oh, this has been brewing since third grade and now it's sixth grade, but you just really had all of these relationships.
Or even a month. Like, I just think the one day is just like,
it's too fast.
It just rushes everything for no reason. There's nothing in the story that like needs to be in a day. If it had been a week or a month or a school year or whatever, it would have been fine.
Because you're already kind of taking the emotions from adults with, you know, sex and like jealousy and all that stuff. You're reducing it to kids, which I think is not a bad thing.
Sure.
But you're already changing that up, and then you're going to truncate time, and it's like it just feels so unrealistic.
Right. And one of the things in – so just for full disclosure, I recently reread Othello just to be able to have this conversation because I did want to be able to compare. And I know Vella has read
Othello. I did not.
But you've read it.
I've read it, but it's been a minute.
It's okay. I just – so I'm kind of going to be
She's
like –
She's the expert.
Well, I'm just going to be bringing it back to Othello a few times here and there just so that we can kind of try to stick with the story, even though Tracy Chevalier does say in like the author's notes that she – read the play twice and then decided to put it aside and write her own story. So that was a choice that she made. And I think that that is actually very clear when you read the book. Like there are parts of the book where of New Boy where I'm like, did that happen in that poem? Like, no.
Yeah.
No. Girl, no. So I think that the thing that stuck out for me most was the lack of subtlety in the racism in New Boy.
Yes.
And you brought up a really good point as we were just preparing to jump into this conversation, which was that in Othello, they really don't say expressly that they hate him because he is a Moor or a black guy. They kind of like dance around it, which I think is true.
I think that
to how people are generally racist.
I do too, because you know, life. Everyone is always like, "I'm not a racist, but I don't trust that guy because
of his hoodie."
Right, and it's all these subtle ways where people don't actually want to take accountability for having these snap judgments that are based in fear. But like, and that's what's so great about the play is like it's about other things. And this theme of him being a Moor keeps coming up.
Right. And like that Iago has felt Iago is the villain in the Shakespeare play. Mm-hmm. The character in the book is called Ian. So we're going to try to use both their characters' names in the book and then the characters' names in the play for distinction.
I mean, I think Ian is short for Iago,
Of course. Right. You know, the great Shakespearean name, Ian. Ian. Like Ian McKellen. Actually, did he ever play Iago? I bet he did.
He probably should.
Must have. Yeah. Anyways, but Iago, I can't even remember. I think that he mentions that he's like this black guy, this Moor, but it's like one off early on. And then for the rest of the play, like it does come up. They're like, oh, you know, the Moor said this, you know, Othello, comma, the Moor.
Right.
But it's not like, oh, get over here, you Moor.
Yeah, exactly. I hate you because you're a Moor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
It's more layered and it's almost by like not talking about it, but like,
right.
It almost becomes more clear.
Well, you set it up and then you let everything else happen. And then that's the way that racism functions, right? It's like you set someone up for failure and then you say you failed. And it's not about race. It's about your failure.
It's about you didn't do this.
You didn't do good enough. If you had been twice as good, maybe you could have done it. But I'm sorry. Like black people aren't as smart or whatever.
Racism is so that's why it's so complicated because it's not overt. And the people who are racist usually just don't like they don't wear it.
And we're not saying that there's not overt racism and that's its whole own other thing. But so much, especially right now in 2018, like we're seeing more overt racism. But so much of like systemic racism in America comes from
subtle
it lies policies below the belt.
And, you know, things that were told over and over and lies and stuff. There's an amazing, amazing, dense but amazing nonfiction book called Stamped from the Beginning by Ibram X. Kendi. And it's all about racist thoughts in America. I'm not just saying it's an amazing book. It won like the National Book Award or Did it win the Pulitzer? I don't know. It won awards. It's an amazing book. But he talks a lot about racist ideas and how racist ideas inform racist policies and racist policies inform racist ideas.
Yeah.
And that ignorance like isn't a way to – isn't an excuse for being racist. Like that you can't just say, oh, he doesn't know better. It's like, no, in fact, he does or she does. They do know and they live these racist policies for whatever their reasons are. I mean, it's just so complicated and there's so much there.
You could talk about it for hours, right. And I think to read something that's so simple and so like reductive is it just leaves you with this funny feeling in your stomach because you're like things aren't it's not that simple
and even kids aren't that simple
kids are no kids are I mean that's why I was so excited to read it is I was like oh it's gonna be like it's gonna be so subtle and like. So richly like, oh, my parents do this and like, I don't know what I think and like, you know what I mean? But like, not just overtly like saying like, I don't know, like, oh, that there's the black boy. He must be good at sports because he's black. Like all of the things that the kids say, I think it kind of like discredits them a little bit.
Yeah. And so one of the things that happens, I think maybe two or three times in the book, New Boy, is the teachers or the students will be like, oh, it must be so hard for you being black. New.
Oh, yeah.
And like literally it's like B-L hyphen hyphen.
I mean, new. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, oh, well, go get that black new boy. Right. And so like that's kind of where the title comes from, New Boy. And I just think honestly, you should just call it Black Boy.
Black Boy. Yeah.
Like why are you like just call it Black Boy. And then not to be like a psycho nitpicky person, which I am, but not to expose that about myself just yet. I'm pretty sure that in the 1970s, they were still using the term colored.
Yes.
I don't think black.
Or like Afro-American.
Sure. And I mean, I think in some places, they were still kind of using Negro.
Yes.
I know that like 60s was kind of the end of Negro, but kind of depending and.
Yeah. It's so crazy. Like if they hadn't like. If they hadn't like sometimes talked about bell bottoms and like a few little cultural things, like I don't know why it was in the 70s.
Right. Well, she says she wanted to like write about her childhood because she grew up in DC and she was raised in the 70s. But I mean, I think she, I think there's a few, I think that there are ways to tell this story. And I think that Chevalier does some disservices to herself by picking
that time period, that setting, those,
the age group,
the time.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. If you were going to do this story, kind of like, how do you think that you maybe would retell Othello?
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking like, it'd be cool to like, kind of take, like almost just take the main character, which is, I think maybe what I thought was going to happen, totally set it in a school setting, but like then totally forget everything else and just like do it through his eyes and, and live his life as like a new person coming to an all white school. Forget about like all the little, you know, intricacies and like character things and handkerchiefs and pencil cases. In New Boy, the handkerchief is now a pencil case, but like
a strawberry pencil case.
But like, I don't know, just kind of like be Othello and like see what life is like being the only person in this sea of white. And then, and kind of like, I felt like she was so like, you know, beholden to telling the exact story that she almost didn't get to just, you know, say like, screw it and like do her own thing and find new things.
Right. Even though she says that's what she tried to do. I feel like she didn't. She tried to retell the story, but she just,
told the story and changed the name.
Just like didn't do as good. I mean, look, Shakespeare is a genius. Like it's hard to retell Shakespeare. I can't, I mean, there are productions that I've seen using Shakespeare's text where I'm sometimes like, why did you set this in Kuwait?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Just
like,
do it.
You're
just
not that smart. Just set it. Just everybody
how
should
How would read you? I'm curious. How would you tell
So if I was going to do her version, the first thing that I would do is I would not make the Othello character Osei, or they call him O. I would not make him from Ghana. I would make him, I would make it like a rich white school in Chicago.
Yes.
And he gets bussed in from like a poor neighborhood in like the south side of Chicago. And I would make it so that it was like late 80s, early 90s, kind of like when the whole crack epidemic and like,
love it.
You know, because then you have that like racism of like, oh, does your mom do crack?
Yeah.
Like, and I wouldn't make him the son of a diplomat. I would just make him like a smart kid.
Yeah.
And because like one of the things that happens in the play Othello is that Othello is the lieutenant, or like he's in charge of this part of the army.
He's starting at such a high place.
Yeah. So I like, maybe he's like an honor student, right? And like, instead of all the teachers being like, who's this black or new boy, I would make him be like, excited.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're bringing in diversity. We're so excited. And so then that gives a reason for the Ian Iago character to be like jealous and to feel like he, you know, thought he was smart and he thought he was going to like be on the debate team or whatever it is. And then you give them something to play off of. But if you bring him in and all the teachers are like, ew, he's black.
Ooh, he's a black new boy.
And all the students are like, I've never seen a real life black person. And like, he's coming in as like already the bottom of the totem pole. There's nowhere for him to fall. And there's no reason to want to bring him down. Because in this story, it would just be like, oh, there's a black kid. Like, let's not talk to him.
Right.
Like, there's no reason for him to get involved with anybody.
Like, he's already like so on the bottom when he comes in that it's just kind of, you don't understand.
Or maybe you bring him in and he's like, you know, they're in high school, or maybe it's in college and he's like the recruit, like the big, the star quarterback guy
of another school.
I think that's what they do in the O movie.
Oh, and O. Okay.
But you give him a reason to be, people to be excited about him, which then gives Iago a reason to not be excited about him, to feel like he's been usurped.
Right.
If you want to be Shakespearean.
Usurped. Other than just overt racism of, I don't like him because he's black. He must go down. Because that's what it ended up feeling like in New Boy. And so it felt just like less interesting, less complicated, and so less real.
Sure. Sure. I mean, one of the things, like, when I read Shakespeare and when I think about Shakespeare, and I often think about like, how would I want to retell this story? Mm. And as I was rereading Othello, I was thinking like, you know, this is like so Barack Obama, right? Like, this is so what the Republicans wish they could have done to Barack Obama, right? They just, besides that Barack Obama is married to a beautiful black woman who's amazing in every way, and not that white women aren't. I have a black dad and a white mom. So like, please don't come at me about interracial relationships. Like, I am not the one.
Not today, sweetie.
But it is like that idea that like, here is this out of nowhere rising star that people are so into.
Yeah.
And like, how does that affect someone like Iago, who really embodies that white male fragility that we talk so much about right now, especially like with these school shootings and, you know, this violence and this acting out and these.
And also with, I think maybe just because like Get Out and the Oscars and everything, I kept thinking about the kind of the Get Out like theme of just like, oh, black people are amazing at all of these different things. Like this myth of like, black people are better, you know, like better dancers and better looking and better at sex and like all of these things, and like feeling so afraid of that.
Right.
And so insecure about like white fragility.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Being replaced, all of that stuff that there's that element as well.
Right. There's just so much in Othello and like in all of Shakespeare's plays, but this one I felt like this could have been written yesterday. Like this theme of this like white guy who just sees it all slipping away. Cause in the play, Othello's the lieutenant or whatever military thing that he is, and he promotes Cassio to be his number two, which is the Casper character in the book. Mm-hmm. And Iago thinks that he should have been promoted to that position. And so he's basically like, I'm not going to let this black guy come in here and just promote this other guy when I'm clearly the right choice. Like, that should be me.
Yeah.
And it just spirals from that. Like, you see your expectations are not meeting the reality, and he just spirals, which just, I can't believe that that is something that I'm like, was written in, I think it was 1603.
And also just about infidelity and the male ego and women and husbands and wives and kind of like how jealousy just can, because at first, you know, when Iago tries to convince Othello that that Desdemona is having an affair with Cassio, he says, I need proof. Like I literally like, I trust her. I love her. Yeah.
Right.
And it's the way that Iago kind of worms his way. So it's about like, it's about so many
things. So many things.
And also the language is just incredible.
The language is incredible.
And so Tracy and I were talking about this before. Like, if you don't have the beauty of that language, and then you're just reducing all the themes to like very simple kind of like black and white, very like cut and dry, there's a right and there's a wrong, that it, you lose the magic. That's right. Kind of what I thought the whole time. I was just like, oh, okay, this is kind of the Cliff Notes version, but like with not as
– right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Tracy Chevalier's version would have been better. I mean, not better. Like I could see a stage production of her version if they were using the Shakespearean text. It would be hard to get 11-year-olds to say the lines maybe, but I don't know. There are some amazing children actors.
Yeah.
Get the little boy from Moonlight. What's his
name? Oh, yeah. He's great.
Alex Hibbert is
also the Stranger Things cast.
Sure.
You could just pick them up and just have them do it.
Have them do it. Like there are kid actors who could do it.
Yeah.
But it's like if you take the language out, and so much of it is the language and like rereading the book. Mm-hmm. I mean, Vella and I sat here before we started recording and I just was reading her passages and like, how great is this line? Do you remember this scene? Like,
yeah.
There's a scene at the end of Othello between Emilia and Desdemona that is like, gives you goosebumps. It's so good. And it has that famous speech. I think it's husband's fault if wives do fall or whatever.
Yeah.
It's one of the most famous speeches from the play.
Look it up.
it's so good. I don't know. It's really, I think if you know, it's one of the female versions of like a to be or not to be type speech.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not a lot. If you don't know this, a lot of Shakespeare's famous monologues are for men. There's not a lot of real famous female ones.
Yeah.
Juliet has Gallop of Foot, you fiery, or Gallop a Pace, you fiery footed steed. And then Lady Macbeth.
It's the same ones that get done over
Lady
and over.
Macbeth has the Unsex Me Here.
Mm-hmm. Then you got some Midsummer ones.
Are those ones? Oh, well, there's that line that everybody loves. It's like, though she be but small, she be mighty. I'm tall, so I don't really care about her. And so are you.
We were more the Helena.
We're more Helenas. We need to, like, we.
Oh, happy some.
How happy some or other some can be. So, Athens, I am not as fair as she. That was my college audition monologue.
Me too.
Okay, great.
Great. we are the same person.
Thank you for listening to Shakespeare Corner here at the Stacks.
But also, like, thinking about, like, talking about Emilia. So, a new boy, now she's Mimi.
Which is, why can't she just be Emily? Why is she Mimi? Like, it's so trivializing. And I find that Emilia in the play is the best character.
Yeah.
She is like the speaks truth to power person. She unfolds the whole story. She figures it out. She soothes Desdemona before she's killed. She gets all up in Iago's face. She tells Othello that he's an idiot. And it's not because you're black. It's because you're dumb, my guy. You got played.
You got played. Also, she is in such a complicated position because she's Iago's wife.
Right.
And so already she's so wrapped up in things where it's like in New Boy, she and Ian just started going together the day before.
Yeah, I think it was 5 days.
Oh, sorry. 5 days before they were going together. And now she's just wrapped up. She has to get out of the relationship.
Right.
But the stakes just like cannot be anywhere where they
the
have to be.
The stakes are not anywhere.
The
right.
stakes are nowhere.
Right. Because if you're 11, everybody think back to your boyfriend when you were 11 or girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Or partner, whatever, whoever you are. Think back to that
Some
lover.
Of us were just reading books alone at recess. I don't know who those people were.
Okay, well, think about your first ever person that you maybe smooched.
Right, okay.
Like, do you even care about that person anymore? I'm having a hard time remembering his last name.
Yeah.
I remember the first name, that's all. The point being, like, there's no stakes in an 11-year-old's relationship.
No. That doesn't mean that 11-year-olds don't feel great things.
Right. But it's very easy to get out of a situation when you're 11. Even though you might feel in the moment that it was challenging, there's also, like, okay, great.
Yeah, I gotta eat lunch now.
Yes, exactly. Let's move on. Like, and that's not to say that there aren't things that happen to 11-year-olds that aren't high stakes, and those things I would love to hear a play about.
But I think that there's a way that she could have done it where, like, using those feelings that 11-year-olds have and that passion, because they do have it.
Right.
But, like, she would have had to let go of following
the
plot
story so closely.
So tightly.
Right.
And, I don't know if that was the assignment for the Hogarth things.
No, because from my understanding, I haven't read any of the other ones, but I hear the one about Merchant of Venice I don't even know the name. Something About Shylock mm-hmm. is fantastic. I've heard Nutshell, which I believe is the Hamlet one, is also really great. It's like yeah. a comedy and yeah. it's told from this point of view of a fetus. Like it's totally unrelated to the story, but it's connected.
And I think you have to do that. You have to let yes. go of it a little bit.
You have
bit.
To let go of it because you're not Shakespeare and you're never going to be Shakespeare.
No.
And there isn't a single thing that's ever been adapted from Shakespeare that's better than Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Now, with that being said, West Side Story is amazing.
It's amazing.
And maybe one of the best musicals ever made.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm going West Side Story, Romeo and Juliet head to head. I don't know what I'm picking.
Well, I think you're picking Romeo and Juliet because right. without Romeo and Juliet, there is no
sure.
West Side Story.
But I guess like that, those two
right.
are standouts.
Yeah.
But that also speaks to the power of Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And also the other thing is that Romeo and Juliet or West Side Story isn't trying to compete with Romeo and Juliet because no. they have Bernstein and Sondheim and you've created yeah. this whole other world and you've written music and you've changed it enough and you've added your own genius to it. Like
completely.
Shakespeare wasn't writing librettos, right? So
right, you elevated.
Exactly.
You elevated something.
Exactly.
And you also let go of things that weren't serving the story.
Right, didn't fit right.
Whereas it just felt like she was trying to hang on to too much. She, also yeah. something I don't know if you were going to talk about
go
this,
ahead.
But the Ian character.
Oh.
We were talking we were talking about how like in New Boy, it's like he's this lurking kid that's dark and everyone has like a bad feeling about him. Like all the kids are like, oh, that guy's up to no good. Whereas the whole thing in Othello is Iago, we were saying like he's referred as honest. He's
honest
referred to
Iago.
As honest Iago over and over. And
good Iago and kind Iago and
yes,
how much
and,
they love
and how much
Iago.
They and he says that too about Othello. He's like, I'm only doing that. I mean, I'm paraphrasing,
right.
obviously. He's like, I'm only doing this because I love you so much.
I love
and
you
I'm
so, much.
So I'm so like loyal to you.
Right. And
you
like
know?
And Othello's like, thank you, my guy. Like, I'm so glad
right.
I have you. You're so honest. And even when Iago is like lying mm-hmm. to people, like to Desdemona, she's like, this can't be right, Iago. I'm like going to him because they all think that he
he's
is
so
the truthful
good.
Person.
Right.
Whereas, like
yeah.
everybody, Cassio seeks him out. Desdemona seeks him out. Othello seeks
he's
him out.
He's the confidant. Yeah.
Right. Of everybody.
Yeah.
And in this, it's like Ian walks through the playground
and the kids
shudder. And like there's a cold wind.
Yeah.
So it's like, of course, if he's talking to you, you're going to be like, why is this guy talking to me? He's clearly evil. And like, it's even like Dee, the Desdemona character, mm-hmm. Chevalier even says like, Dee is weirded out that Ian's talking to her because he like doesn't really talk to her.
Right, right.
Like he's like, they're not each other's people.
And Mimi, who's Amelia, when she had her long relationship of 3 days with Ian, she hated it the whole time. She felt weird about it and like he had a darkness inside of her. And it's
right.
like, so that's literally not the story that's in Othello.
Well, just there's – so why – like there's no reason for this story to happen.
Right.
Right? There's no reason.
Of course no one would trust Ian.
Right. Because he's horrible and like is a mean, mean bully.
He's a mean, mean boy.
And it's just like, well – and you can tell like mm-hmm. the other version of this play or story that would have been great is like if you tell it from Ian's perspective.
Yeah.
And it's like he is seeing how he's like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I used to be the person that everybody was looking at and yes. talking about. And like my bad behavior was like the thing that everybody
yes.
was like, where's Ian? Blah, blah, blah. And now this new boy is here and he's getting all the attention. But
yeah.
like she tells it from kind of like, it's not from people's perspective. So it's not first person.
No, it's no one's perspective.
I mean, it's not first person. It's third person.
Person.
But it's from different people's like point of view, but it's
kind
third
of,
person. So it's like,
yeah, you get
then she went home
head.
And she felt sad. And then her mom said this, but it's not like, I feel sad. My mom said this, which
yeah.
I think would have helped her to being inside the kid's perspective.
I do too. I think that would have been so, I mean, because with Shakespeare, with the soliloquies, you
ugh.
Completely get in.
Sure.
They get to just talk to you.
Right.
So you are with them. You
right.
are in their first person in
right.
a way. So it's like,
yeah.
I think I totally agree that if she had just maybe like split up the chapters and each
sure.
chapter was a different character,
right.
maybe that could have
right.
helped.
And the other thing, which I learned this in college from Louis Schieder,
mm-hmm.
Is that in Shakespeare, they say what they mean. The characters say what they mean unless they tell you otherwise.
In
so
a
like
soliloquy.
In an aside,
yeah.
in a soliloquy.
Yeah.
Unless they say, I am setting this plot in motion.
Yeah.
I am lying. I will be lying for the next few scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
They tell the truth.
Yeah.
So like, and that's not to say that they don't flip flop. Like in one moment you could be saying, I'm so like, you know, yeah. in Romeo and Juliet, there's that whole thing about the day. And then mm-hmm. later on in the play, it's all about the night and the moon mm-hmm. and this and that. So it's not to say that people don't change their mind. And but sometimes it's in the same sentence, say. But in the moment that the words are being spoken, they mean it. And I think that that really could have helped Chevalier, because yeah. that's very much like children.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like children flip flop and they mean what they say and they say what they mean. And if they lie, I mean, my niece, she's hilarious because she'll do something. She'll be like, I'm going to go eat that cookie. Mm-hmm. And she'll eat the cookie. Mm-hmm. And then she'll come in the room and she'll be like, Mommy, I ate the cookie. I'm sorry. And you're like, perfect. Go to your room. Thank you.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Or it's like, who ate the cookie? And she'll be like, it was I. I did it.
I love it.
But it's like that.
But that's fascinating.
That's
as well.
Fascinating in and of itself. Like, what if all these characters weren't trying to hide anything and they were just following their impulses like children do?
Mm-hmm.
It just is disappointing to me because I think there's so much in Othello and she could have done yeah. so many different things. And I have to say, there's one thing that I think she did really good.
Uh-huh.
And that has to do with sexism. Because in rereading Othello, I didn't realize how sexist the male characters are towards the women.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bianca is like, they call her like a whore and a courtesan and whatever. And it's kind of unclear because she's like, I'm not actually
like,
a whore.
Yeah, like, she really just like is maybe sleeping with Gazio. Right.
Yeah. And she says boyfriend. Like, she's like, I'm as honest as her about Amelia. And Amelia's like, all right, trick. Like, yeah. nice try. But it's like, that's the direct quote. It says, all right, trick. And then there's 8 bars of scansion just left open. No. But there's so much sexism and and in New Boy, like there's this part where Desdemona or Dee takes her braids down and the teachers are like, you look unkempt. That's mm-hmm. not becoming of a girl. And there's, you know, Blanca, who's the Bianca character, is like kind of sexy. She's, you know, she's got her little training bra situation.
Yeah.
And they talk about how her shirt's too tight and all the boys talk about like they're embarrassed by her womanliness coming forward and the other girls notice that she's using flirting and this and that. And like that all is talked about. And I took note of that before I went back and reread the play and I was like, oh
she did. Yeah.
Cause I thought it was just the author trying to like inject
add
it.
Yeah.
Cause it's not really fully fleshed out, but it is, she does try to add a little bit of that, which that's I appreciate.
Yeah.
You know,
my one thing that it made me, you know, want to look at Othello again, which I definitely will after this,
yes.
Is that because it's so overt, the racism, because mm-hmm. it's so like, he's a black boy, new boy, I don't trust him. I was like, oh, like my understanding of Othello is that it's so underneath everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so intrinsic and it's so deep seated, because it's about on the surface, it's jealousy and I got passed over and I feel like he might cuckold me or mm-hmm. all these things. But the through line is that he is black and he is different.
Right.
But it made me think, oh, is it really just about completely about race? Is there a world where Othello is just completely race the whole way through?
Sure.
Which is like a lens you could look at it with, you know, and maybe that was what she was trying to say, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. We're going to take a quick little break before we talk about the ending of this amazing play, and we're going to talk to you about something else that's amazing. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning.
AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Also, I actually found there's an audiobook version of Othello the play that is a staged reading. And I believe it's I'm going to look it up because I'm going to fuck this up.
Ian McKellen,
bad.
Sir?
No, I think it's the other one. And
the other Ian.
Hold on.
Patrick Stewart.
I don't know. It's more recent. It's younger. You can hear me typing like really fast. God, I can't find it. I hate myself. I should have been more prepared.
I'm sure it's easy to find.
It's like Michael Oyelowo. And like, it's really cool.
David Oyelowo?
Yeah, or David Tracy.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's like actors doing it.
It's
Daniel Craig, David Oyelowo. It's like a production that it's the Sam Gold's production.
At New York Theater Workshop.
Exactly.
That is so cool because what we were talking about last week in the episode was about how it can be intimidating to read Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And that actually it's really helpful to envision it and hear it out loud. And so that's kind of a perfect way to do that.
Yeah. So check out that audiobook version if you are a little intimidated about reading Shakespeare, because, you know, hearing people do it is really great. And I'm looking at pictures right now of this production, and it's set in the military fully, which is how Othello is set. They're like in army clothes and stuff. Anyways, check it out. Audible, free download, free 30-day trial. Enjoy your life. Okay. Vella, we're going to talk about the ending of both the book and the play, because the ending in the play gave me goosebumps when I was rereading it, and I had like tears in my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there being like, I forgot how good this play was. Mm-hmm. Like, this act 4 and act 5 of William Shakespeare Othello is top notch. Like, it's top notch.
On fire.
It's top notch.
Well, it's everything coming to a head.
Everything coming together, and it's all unfolding, and you're like, stop, 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 stop. It's that feeling of like, mm-hmm. you've seen the Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Of course.
Everyone. If you have, honestly, if you've not seen that, stop listening to us now. Go watch that film and then come back, because you are missing everything.
It's so good. It's so, so solid.
But at the end of that, when Juliet like wakes up from her fake death, mm-hmm. and he's like dead.
Yeah. Spoiler alert for RNG.
Oh, sorry. Romeo and Juliet, it's a tragedy. People die.
Oh my God.
Is that right? Know. She wakes up second.
Yeah.
Well, no, yeah, he wakes up second.
No, yeah. She's fake dead.
And so then, is he?
She's fake dead. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to be real dead. And he takes the potion. And then she wakes up.
And then she shoots herself.
She,
that's right.
Yeah.
So, but when she wakes up and he's dying and like you see her fingers moving and you're like, oh my God, just faster. Yeah. Wake up. Yeah. Like, don't take the poison. That's kind of how the unfolding of Othello felt when I was reading it. I was like, just like, can you just listen to her for like 2 seconds, Othello? Like, can you just like, listen?
Yeah. Cause the whole thing with Othello is like, if they were just one step ahead,
right? If they could communicate just a little bit faster,
so easy to unravel this situation that Iago has set up.
Right. Exactly. Like it's so easy. So in New Boy though, she strays from the story, and again, as she strays, I think the theme of this episode is don't stray from the story when the story is Shakespeare.
It's so good.
Because you're leaving out things that make it make sense. So, for example, in the play, Rodrigo, who is the Rod character in the book and is like Iago's pal, who Iago thinks is an idiot, and he is, Iago basically – got to back up a little bit more. Othello tells Iago to kill Cassio. Iago then passes that off to Rodrigo. Mm-hmm. Rodrigo goes to kill Cassio. Neither of them die when they get in this fight. And behind everyone's back, like no one can see because it's dark, Iago then goes and actually kills Rodrigo. Mm-hmm. So Iago's first death, like the first death in the play, is Iago killing his quote-unquote right-hand man. Mm-hmm. And also literally leg-stabbing, like slicing open Cassio's leg, like trying to wound him further because he realizes that if he gets caught,
that it's all over
because he has these two people that he's been playing.
Yeah.
So in the book, there's no Iago or Ian doesn't actually do anything to either person.
To Rod. Yeah. Well, and
to
like
Rod or to Casper.
Casper has been suspended.
Has been suspended for a fight earlier, which does mirror an earlier fight in Othello. There's two fights between Rodrigo and Cassio in Othello.
Right.
The second one ending in Iago killing Rodrigo.
But isn't the first one when Iago like convinces him to drink Cassio?
Yes. Yes. And that's the first fight, which is how that starts everything. So we kind of said that you don't need to read either of these things, but you should read them because they're confusing you. But anyways, the point being that in Othello, Iago commits his own acts of violence that in the book doesn't happen.
Yeah. Just not at all.
Well, he pulls Emilia off the thing. Right. So then in the book, we move to the big like scene between Osei and D. What's her real? What are they called?
Danielle or something. Daniela.
Something stupid.
Yeah.
No, if your name is Danielle, it's not stupid. I just think Desdemona is so great. Like, I think Danielle and Danielle are both lovely names. I just mean, just like Ian is like stupid for Iago.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's a solid name.
They're lovely names.
They're
all of
lovely
them.
Names.
Mimi is actually a really cute name. I just think like it trivializes Amelia, which is like such.
It's so
you have
like
all those
Amelia.
Syllables too in the verse. It's just good.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Othello or Osei and Dee, they are together on top of this play structure, and O is like going to tell her off, kind of. And in the play, in this scene. It's a little more dramatic. He actually smothers her with a pillow until she's dead. Well, she's almost dead.
And then Emilia walks
in. Then Emilia comes in. Then Desmond is like, this guy killed me.
Yeah.
And she's like, no. And she's like, yes. No, for, no.
Oh, right.
First
she's like, remember that he.
First she says, no, first she says, nobody killed me. It was an accident or something like that. And then she says, this guy killed me. Anyways. So it starts to unravel in this way. But the thing that's really important here is that Desdemona dies in Othello.
Yeah.
And in – what happens in New Boy?
Well, Osei calls her a whore and then she runs away.
But she runs away.
You know, really comparable things.
Sure.
Totally.
Well, something that you – irreversible. Calling someone a whore is as irreversible as death is what we're being asked to believe.
Yeah, they're pretty much the same thing.
And
stakes are
so
up there.
High.
Yeah.
And sure, we're kind of making a joke of that because if that was all that happened in the ending of the book and like that those were the highest possible stakes, it would be fine. But then Emilia or Mimi comes over and she's like, "Why did you do that? O, and O's like, because she gave so-and-so my pencil case, Casper my pencil case. And Mimi's like, no, I gave that to Ian, and he's like, wait, what? And as she's getting ready to like finish telling the story, Ian yanks her off the play structure and paralyzes her.
And then she can't move her body, then and she can't blood is like spilling out.
So what's confusing for both Bella and I, if you can't tell, is how come Desdemona, who gets killed, is just getting called a whore, and Mimi is all of a sudden being destroyed. However, in the play, Amelia is killed. So Desdemona and Amelia get killed in the play. But in this, it's like, meh.
Mimi's paralyzed and Desdemona,
like, went home early.
Yeah, went home early.
It was actually after school, so she just went home at a normal time. But and was maybe
being
crying.
Called a whore by her boyfriend of 4 hours.
Who said that they went all the way.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. She said, he says, we went all the way because all white girls want this D.
Yeah. Which,
yeah. Also, we should talk about, well, I don't know. I partly was like, I think writers should obviously write about experiences that they have not
had. Wait, hold on. We have to finish.
We have to finish
that. We have to finish the end. Okay. Here's the last thing that happens. Okay. So in Othello kills himself.
Yeah.
Dead. By his own sword. Because he's so devastated because Amelia has been like, this is what happened. Iago did this. Iago's like, stop talking. She's like, no, I'm a finish.
Yeah.
And then she keeps going. And then eventually Iago stabs and kills his own wife so that she'll shut up. And then Othello is so distraught and like realizes that he's trapped and like he has committed the ultimate black man sin, which is to lash out against a white woman, right? Ideally. I mean, that's me putting a little bit of more modern time on it. But either way.
Yeah.
So he kills himself. In this book, what ends up happening is the racist teacher, Brabantio, or Mr. Brabant, comes in and he says, nigger, which, like, we've already been building towards this the whole book. Like, he might as well have just called him nigger from the jump. But anyways, so he does that. And then, does a black power salute, like a fist in the air, like John Carlos and Tommy Smith, and then dives off the play structure and it blacks out. So we're led to believe that he commits suicide by black power gesture via
on the
playground.
On the recess playground.
Right. So the ending is just, I was really looking forward to the ending because in my version of this, aside from the fact that it's not true because black children don't shoot up schools generally, it's usually white children. It's like more of the Iago thing. I feel that that's how this story would realistically end in my version of it, because that to me,
that's
that
high
has
stakes.
The stakes.
Yeah, that's
well,
high stakes.
And maybe it is that Iago comes in and he brought a gun to do something bad to somebody, and somehow Othello gets a hold of it and he kills Desdemona, or maybe he kills Desdemona in a different way. Maybe he strangles her in the gym closet and then feels so bad, takes the gun and kills himself.
Or maybe he locks himself in a room with Iago to like save other people. Or like he's, you know.
Yeah, there's lots of options, but I just feel like it's like you can't have Desdemona be totally, I mean, emotionally not fine, and like bullying women is not a good thing, and like treating women badly, all that stuff. But if we're comparing, you know,
stakes of death.
If we're comparing the stakes of suicide by playground and being paralyzed and then being called a name at the age of 11, it just
the ending
just was so disappointing.
Right, the whole thing is that Othello kills his white wife, and then like, how did that end up happening?
How did we get here?
How did we get here? Whereas you have new boy, and it's like, how? Why did he kill himself?
Why are we here?
Why are we here?
Totally. You were going to say something else, and I cut you off a while ago.
Oh no, it's good that we finished. But I wondered if why some of the things were so simplified. Isn't that maybe? Just because of her writing from her own experience, and maybe she didn't fully understand. I don't know. But like, at the same time, like Shakespeare wrote Othello, you know? So like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That was my easy go-to.
Like, try to give
question.
Her the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. Well, I don't have an answer for you because I don't know why she picked Othello. To be honest.
Yeah, I had that question too.
I don't know how the Hogarth Shakespeare works. She could have picked anything.
Seemed like it was their choice. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe the ones she wanted to do were gone first, or maybe she thought, I know she said that she liked the play because she is an American who lives in England. So she feels like an outsider in where she lives. But I think it's a little bit more, this plays about a little bit more than feeling like an outsider.
Yeah.
Because also, while Othello is an outsider, that's not really talked about at all. Like, he does not in any of his like speeches say, wow, I really feel out of place here. He's like, no, he's like, living
I'm
life.
Doing great. Yeah.
I am doing so great. I am a black man who is thriving in the military. I got myself a beautiful wife who people seem to really like. Yeah. I'm in with the Duke. I got my boy Cassio on one side. I got my boy Iago on the other side. Yeah. Like, I have friends. I've conquered all this stuff. And
it's a theme that she, you're right. She kind just of missed.
I think
took it.
I think if I was going to simplify, the biggest miss in the whole thing is that she doesn't place Othello high enough to have a fall, and she doesn't place Iago low enough to have something to be trying to rise to.
Very well said.
I mean, I think for me, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have anything else really to say about the book. I will say this. If you've yet to read this book, I know we kind of just bashed it, which as you get to know me, that's something that I love to do. Mm-hmm. I love to tear apart art. I find it to be more enjoyable. Like, if I see something that I really like, I'm like, good. But like, I can find fault in just about anything because I went to school to study art. And so when you study art, you learn how to talk about and give criticism. And that's not to say that I didn't enjoy it.
No.
And that's not to say that like my favorite musical isn't Chorus Line, which is like, you know, there are some flaws there.
No, there are none.
None that I can see. But the point being that I'm not – this book, I think it definitely has an audience. I've heard from people who really love this book, and I would be interested to hear from you if you fall into that category. And also, if you haven't read it yet and you're like intrigued about it, I would recommend you read it, and I would recommend you then read the play or see the play or listen to the play just, you know, to see what happened and –
yeah, see if maybe like that you found a way in.
Right.
Maybe we didn't.
Yeah. And I feel like every book, there's an audience for just about every book.
Yeah.
This book just wasn't for me. I think also you and I come into this with so much like love and understanding for Shakespeare that it's harder.
I was thinking, I was like, maybe if like I was like 14 or something.
Yeah. I thought this book was YA about halfway through, but it's not.
It's not. But like, I was thinking like maybe if this was my first introduction to the play, it could be like an interesting way in.
Sure. Cause like I hated Taming of the Shrew, and then I saw, 10 Things I Hate About You. And then I was like, oh, maybe this play's good. Let me give it another chance. Yeah. And then I was in it, and then I still didn't like it that much, but I understood it better.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else that you want to add or say that we didn't talk about?
No, I mean, I'm glad to have read it.
Mm-hmm.
It
was, me too.
I feel like I've never regretted reading a book.
Me neither, ever.
So I'm really glad we read it. I'm glad we explored it. And it did make me want to reread Othello. So
Do it.
It's a win-win.
Othello's so good, you guys. Everybody talks about how good Shakespeare is, and some of it's really good, and then some of them aren't that good. Like, some of them are fine, but Othello is, like, actually that good.
Yeah.
Like, Othello is giving me Richard III, Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth levels.
Winter's Tale, Jealousy.
Winter's Tale.
It kind of has all of these themes.
It has a lot of the other plays kind of wrapped up in it. Okay. That's it from us. We will be back next week. The World Cup starts. So I'm actually going to be back with Aaron Dolores, who is from Black Arrow FC, which is a lifestyle brand that deals with Black culture and soccer culture and that in that intersection. So he and I are going to be talking next week. And then the following week, we're going to be talking about a book called How Soccer Explains the World. And we're going to be talking a lot about Blackness in soccer. So I'm very excited. Listen to that. And thank you, Vella, so much for being here. You're the best.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I will link to all of Vella's social media and all her movies and shows and stuff so you can find her and follow her and love her and just become obsessed with her like the rest of us. All right, you guys, thank you so much. We will see you next Wednesday. And until then, enjoy your reading. Okay, y'all, that does it for us this week here at the Stacks. Thank you again to Vella Lavelle for coming on the show, and thank you to all of you for listening. Please make sure you're subscribed to the Stacks wherever you get your podcasts. For those of you who listen through iTunes, please rate and review the show. It really goes a long way to helping us get the word out. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we just launched our Patreon page today. Go to www.patreon.com/thestacks to find out how you can be part of the Stacks pack and get those extra special perks for all of our supporters. The Stacks graphic designer is Robin McCrite. Our theme music comes from Tagirigis, and the show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. Thank you so much, and I'll see you in the Stacks.